Good morning. Our tech attorney, Rich Honan, pays us a visit with some thoughts on headlines from the business world. And he is here to, talk about things like the world economy and business leaders versus political leaders and all that kind of stuff to help sort it out. We welcome Rich Honan with Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is partner in charge of the Albany office. Rich, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Always good to see you.
Always good to see you.
Thank you very much for coming in and being a part of this. Thank you
for ending the fund drive.
Well, thank you for your part. It's nice to be out. Yeah. Rich and I were going back and forth on some topic ideas, and we're thinking about we started off by talking about the world economy and sort of this idea of you know all that we're going through and that elephant in the room, which is oil. And
yes.
And then Rich brought up a really good point about in this idea of the world economy that in this current climate, in the climate that we are in now, that it is easier to be an effective business leader than it is to be a government leader.
Very much, yeah. Easier to be a CEO or a departmental manager than it is to be a politician at almost any level right now.
Okay, so now that isn't always the case, right?
It's usually, at least we in the business world think the reverse is the case, that you could be a politician and no matter what your merits, no matter what you do, you continue to get reelected and you continue to, you make a bad decision and nobody holds it against you.
Meanwhile, if you make a bad decision in business, it not only affects your business, but you could get the boot as well.
Exactly.
So what is going right for business now?
I think what's going right for business, it's a reflection of kind of what's going wrong in politics. But it's funny, we in business, we kind of have a level of arrogance when you see a lot of bad political decisions. We see all the things going on, right? Iraq and Syria and, just these things blowing up in people's faces, the Moreland Commission and, VA and all this. And there's a level of arrogance where the business leaders will sit around and say, I never would have made that. What were they thinking? I never would have made that decision. But I'm realizing that it's harder. Political people are under many more restrictions in having discussions and making decisions, and it's really agnostic as far as party. I could say the same thing about, George Bush and Dick Cheney, as I would say now about, Obama and Biden. I would say it about Republicans and Democrats. It's very difficult for them to do things right because not so much because of the environment, but because of the decision-making structure they've set up for themselves.
The decision-making structure that they have set up. So how much of it is their quote-unquote leadership, and how much of it is the political system, do you think, i.e., the Constitution?
Yeah. Well, look, I think the Constitution was pretty good, and the Constitution doesn't tell you how to decide things, right? I think though that, look, if you're making a business decision, and I'm a lawyer, we do this all the time, right? So we just concluded a settlement of a really big lawsuit, and there was a series of meetings, and we talked about it, we discussed it, we modeled out certain situations, what consequences did we not anticipate, all those things, and at the end of the day, we came up with a decision we liked, and we carried it out, and we said, yeah, that worked the way it was supposed to. Political decisions, to start with, they don't always, there's a level, we in business say, well, is it just that we're smarter than them? But it really can't be, right? That can't be the answer. It can't be that, a group of people in business is somehow inherently smarter than a group of people who decided to go into politics. So it's not that, but part of it is that the people in business have placed fewer restrictions on their thinking, I think, than people in politics on their decision-making process.
This may be a diversion, although I think it's I think it's accurate, which is that there are several intersections between those in politics and those in business that often the people who become politicians have been successful business leaders.
Yes, except and part of that is not,
or vice versa.
Yeah. And those some of the, and the ones that have become successful are the ones that are able to bring that decision making process and not get sucked into the political process. I mean, the first problem is when you make a business decision, you have a group of people sitting around you, and most of those people are people who are there mostly on their merit. Now we all know in the real world, you know, just because somebody's the boss. Speaking as a boss,
I'd like you to meet my son-in-law. Yeah, right. Sure.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right. So the boss isn't always the smartest person, and the people up in the upper, you know, in the C-level positions aren't always the smartest or the best. But generally, people have gotten there mostly on merit, whereas in politics, people have got there somewhat on merit, but also this person got the job because they were appealing to, you know, this demographic or this part of the country. So you're not even starting off necessarily with the talent pool that you wanted to start with in the first place.
Okay. Right? So but aren't the goals different? Aren't the goals different? I mean, if I'm a voter, so I'm a voter, and I'm looking for, in the truest sense, let's go back to the truest sense.
Right.
Just peel it away to the truest sense. I want someone to represent me in the halls of Congress, and I'm going to look for the person who embodies my views as much as possible, who I will vote for to send to Washington to reflect my views and represent me and my region. That's the way the system is set up. Correct?
Agreed, although I think that is morphed a little bit. But go ahead. So you want to use that as your assumption. I'll take that as the assumption.
Okay. Well, I mean, isn't that the way we set it up? You have a representative form of government. You send people to represent you. And so I don't disagree with you that it's morphed, but what I'm saying is that it starts out as a representative form of government. We send people to represent our views, which is different than, I think, different than what a CEO or a business leader would be trying to accomplish, correct?
I think that where I think it is morphed away from, if you look at the way the republic was first started, and I'm using the word republic,
yes,
it was not necessarily that you were looking for people who would support all of your views. It was that you were looking for people who you trusted to make important decisions, often decisions that you felt were beyond you. I'm talking back in the formation of the country,
right?
I mean, you see what's that line? I don't know if it's Adams or he's writing back to his wife, and he says, this is like a collection of demigods.
Yeah.
And these are pretty smart people, pretty accomplished people, and they're just awed by the company they're in. And a lot of them were put there because people said, this guy, in those days it was this guy, this guy is smarter than me, and I trust him to make decisions on things that ultimately are going to benefit me. Over time, then it became, well, what you said, you know, I want somebody who's going to represent me, and they're going to be with me on all the right issues, you know, so on abortion, they're going to be with, on gay rights and entitlements and things like that. But I think it's actually getting back now to the way it used to be. And the reason is we have so many issues that are knockout issues. You know, it used to be there were only one or two issues,
yeah,
you know, death penalty, abortion, you know, whatever you want. And that now every issue is a knockout issue. So if you, you know, there's 100 issues out there, and if you ding somebody on one of them, suddenly they can't be your representative anymore. You can't do that, right? So it's really become, I just trust this person. You know, and I think it's actually going to start crossing state. It's going to start crossing party lines. Bringing you back to the question, what I'm saying is, I think people say, I want to elect somebody who's going to do a good job. I think people say, I want the boss to do a good job. I want the boss to make things better for me and us. I want Congress to make things better for me and us. It doesn't mean, I don't think it means anymore voting exactly the way I would vote on every issue.
I think you make a good point and a good distinction in what I was saying is that okay, because I'm going by the idea that, that you vote for the person that, that you want representing you. What you're saying is that the pool of people that you get to select from are sort of the cream that has risen to the top.
Yeah, that's what you're hoping. So what that tells us is, again, at some level, people have respect, some trust. They might not like them, but they think the people at some of the upper levels in a business, they believe they know about the business. They believe that they have, you know, a shared greed concept that's going to benefit you as an owner or employee of the business at some point. My point is, when they get people into a room, I think they have more merit-based people than, say, a president, you know, or a cabinet secretary has. You know, that's the first step.
So I'm coming out of this after working for a couple months on a series on civility. So let me ask you this question, because we're all in this, you, me, we're all in this.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning, you ask the American people, it's a toss up as to who they hate the most: politicians, business leaders, or the media. So here we are.
Right.
So with that said, it brings me to what you just mentioned, which I think is important to key in on, is that word trust. And so, how do we trust someone that going back to an old Mark Twainism, you know, is it possible to trust someone who is willing to take that role, willing to do that job?
Well, the way you trust is usually it's based on performance, right?
Right.
And so I think, again, speaking as somebody who's been, you know, a boss, you know, at different levels, a lot of people might not like you. A lot of people might not like the decisions, but a lot of people might say, you know what? Okay, so we're gonna make this call, and it's gonna end up making us money, and that's gonna be good for everybody. Might not have been what I would have done, but we'll wait and see.
Right.
And so I think that you know politicians don't have that to rely on. One, they've made their own mistakes, and two, they're sitting on a foundation of mistakes having been made before them. You know, and so it's hard for them to trust. But I think one. So business people just have kind of more merit-based people around them. Two, in business, the big difference between business and politics is, I said before, there's restrictions on your decision-making, restrictions on your ability to make decisions. There's not as much partisanship in business as there is in politics, to the point where you are such a fierce ideologue that you'll only see that side of it. In, you know, in any business meeting, obviously the people in sales always want to spend more money to increase revenues. You know, the people in accounting and on finance always want to try and cut costs, you know,
right.
And that's really kind of a partisanship on, you know, but at least they see the other side. And at least, you know, you'll sit in a million meetings and people say, well, what do the numbers say? You know, you'll get into the numbers. What are the facts? You know, and are we asking the right questions? Yeah, I see that number, but that number doesn't make any sense. You know, this person billed 1 million hours, but we were only able to charge 1% of their time because the time wasn't good or something.
Right.
You know, you don't get that benefit in a political discussion because everybody's only on one side, and the partisanship, I think, makes them unwilling to be able to have an open conversation.
So, again, great point, because if you are with the whatever corporation, and there may be divisions in that corporation, there's different, you have a CEO, you have a board, and people are looking at, but and that board has a stake. They have a stake in that company.
Yeah.
Now, but in a political sense, you have that group. There's some who have a stake in it. There's some who don't have a stake in it. And there, it's infighting. They're trying to tear each other down so they can have more of a stake in the game, because it's not equal.
True. And in fact, I would say they actually have an inverse relation to the stake, right? Because when you're spending, if in a corporation, in a business, you're at some level, you're spending your own money, or you're spending your customers' or your clients' money, which is still important because how you do that depends on how they view you. So you have a shared interest, a shared stake in that money. In government, it's not your; it's somebody else's money, And by spending that money, you can buy yourself more turf, more influence, more you know, bigger operations. So there's an inverse relationship. So, you know, that's a problem right there, isn't it?
So let me, yes. So yeah. let me ask you this question, because it's one of the things that you brought up, and I think it's a good point to end on as we wrap up. You look at a couple of years ago, just what has happened. So business leaders were getting, you know, every night it was on the news. They're, you know, they show them in handcuffs and they're being pushed into the cars,
right,
and everything else. So now, as you point out, it's been a great few years to be in business. It's been a lousy few years to be a politician. And something that you said earlier, which is you look at some of the political moves that are made and you just shake your head and say, well, why?
What were they thinking?
That seems like that was handled poorly.
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, on every side, right?
On who? Right. Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
Why would you do that?
Right.
I wonder.
And so you would have thought in 2009, you know, you would have thought, well, there's never going to be another bank in America. And,
right.
Right. And now, you know, banks are doing fine. The market's up to a zillion.
Does it have anything to do with political leadership? That the companies are doing better.
No, I think it has. I think.
Have we turned their backs and say, okay, you
exactly.
guys do what you need to do?
That's exactly right. I think that.
Well, that's letting the fox run the hen house, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, but except that.
yeah. What's wrong with that?
No, I don't know that there's. I don't know that we have, you know, big compliance problems or big structural problems right now. I think that business has said, look, you know, we're going to make our decisions our way. I think the big myth, though, is the business people walk around saying, you know, we're smarter than the politicians. And I would say, no, you know what? If they put you in that atmosphere, I don't know that you can make an effective decision either. Okay, as I think about it, we in business are actually pretty lucky to be able to make decisions with smart people, with not much prejudice or partisanship, with getting everybody at the table who's supposed to be at the table, keeping people away who shouldn't be at the table, and then being able to message and execute your decisions. It's kind of a luxury. It's a luxury that people in politics don't have. That's a problem.
In a local level, say a congressional or a state office, it is not unlikely. It is not rare to see a business leader make the jump into some form of politics, whether it's local or state or national.
Right.
And yet,
but they don't last.
Well, right. But I was going to say we see very, very few. Ross Perot, Steve Forbes, yeah. The two that I can think of right off the top of my head that would run for president.
Golisano.
Romney.
You know, Golisano here in New York,
yes.
You know.
Yeah.
He didn't win. But, you know, yeah, they don't last. Because, first of all, the biggest advantage a business person has in a political race is they have the money to spend, right?
Right.
So, and that's what wins races. But the second is they walk in and they have some of the tools, but they can't. You can't change the environment. You could bring in some different people, but it needs a wholesale change to the environment, and they're unwilling to do it, and they lose interest in it pretty fast.
So isn't it up to us as citizens to look at the environment we have now and change it?
Sure. But not necessarily. You would say, well, what do we do? Do we vote out people? Well, maybe we do. Or maybe, I think if there's one takeaway from us as citizens, I think we have to start looking at candidates as people who we would like to have represent us, whether they agree with us or not. Just whether are they people that we think should be a part of the process. You know, and for me, that might mean, you know, some person who's too liberal for me, but I just really trust her. Or I trust him, or I feel like, and I think we as citizens have been unwilling to do that, and maybe we have to be more open to that to try and kind of change the face of the people who are representing us.
I'd vote for you, Rich. No, I would. If I had to, I'd vote for you. Sure. Rich Oden is partner in Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is partner in charge of the Albany office. For more information on the firm, you can visit their website, www.phillipslytle.com. It's always good to have you come in and talk over this stuff with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Always great to have you. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.